Please call the case.
Case number SCAP-16-508, Malulani Group v. Kaupo Ranch. Arguing for the appellant, Bryant R. Jenkins. Arguing for the appellee, Joaquin P. Cox. Also appearing for the appellee, Kamala A. S. Hake. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Cox. Are you ready to proceed today?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Jenkins, you reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning at that point, and Mr. Cox will give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. Thank you. Please proceed, Mr. Jenkins.
The first point that I would like to bring to the Supreme Court is the apparent conflict between the 2013 holding of the Intermediate Court of Appeals in the Malulani Group and also the 2013 holding of the Intermediate Court of Appeals in the Childs versus Harada case. In the Malulani case, they ruled that HRS 657-31 did not apply to non-possessory interests in land, in other words, easements. But in the Childs versus Harada case, the ICA adopted the Matouche versus Lovingood case, a Colorado case. And in that Matouche case, they said that the period of time for adverse possession of easements would be governed by the statutorily mandated period of time for adverse possession, which brings us back to 657-31. That and Chapter 669 both have the 20-year period. That is the prescriptive period. Whenever you see case law on the adverse possession of easements, they always refer to the prescriptive period.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Jenkins, but maybe you could help me with the clarification between adverse possession of easements and implied easements. So did the Childs case involve an implied easement?
No, the Childs case involved an express easement. The whole argument that there's a difference in how an easement should be treated after it is created rises some problematic areas. So an easement can be created by reservation, it can be created by prescription, it can be created by an express grant, by implication. After it's created, nothing makes one easement more important or having a special status in law than any other type of easement.
Well, I'm not sure I'm following exactly, because I think the distinction's been made that statutes of limitations vary according to whether it's an implied easement or whether it's a prescriptive easement, right?
The argument has been made, but I don't think there's a lot of case law to back that up. Yes, the Childs versus Harada case did deal with the fact situation that involved an express easement, an express grant of easement, not an easement that was created by implication or by prescription. But once the easement is created, that non-possessory right to use somebody else's land, why is one, according to the argument of the Malulani Group, supposed to be accorded a special status? They are all equally important, regardless of how they were created.
So are you suggesting that the easement was terminated by prescription? Is that the theory? What exactly is your theory in this case with regard to, and I take it this all relates back to the exchange of correspondence between the predecessor of Malulani Group and the predecessor or Kaupo Ranch?
Yes, so the ICA, and also in the Childs versus Harada case, adopted the Castle Associates versus Schwartz case, which is an accrual case. And under the Castle Associates case, I'm just using my notes here so I don't misspeak. If the need for the right-of-way arises and a demand is made by the owner of the dominant tenement that an easement be opened, and the owner of the servient tenement refuses to do so, the clock starts ticking at that time, regardless of whether it's an easement that was created by express grant, by implication, by prescription, or any other way.
How was there a demand in this case? I didn't think the letter expressed a demand. Was that?
Well, Gary R. Phillips was an attorney with Carl Smith Wickman in case at that time. When an attorney writes to a landowner and informs that landowner, you know, we're going to do a quiet title action to try to establish an easement, but gee, we'd like to get a voluntary easement. perhaps you could construe that as not being a demand, but most people would be quaking in their boots because they know they're about to be made a defendant in a quiet title action. So I believe that constitutes a demand. And then Warren Gunderson, the senior vice president of Calco Ranch, writes back to Mr. Phillips and says, no, we're not going to give you an easement. And then, and only then, the Maulani Group, formerly the Magoon Brothers, waits for 24 years before filing this lawsuit. And that wait in time is what we maintain bars the case. They've lost the most generous period of time under Hawaii case law, 20 years after you're being told you cannot exert your right, exercise your right. You have to do something, go to the court, but you have 20 whole years to do so, and they waited 24 years.
Did you assert, is there a laches defense here?
Yes, there's also a laches defense. Now, the Maulani Group said that I should have used as an affirmative defense that we were adversely possessing the easement back in 2008. It's kind of a disingenuous claim. We did assert the statute of limitations and laches. But at that time, under Hawaii law, it was impossible for an easement by implication to arise when the only common grantor was the government or the Kingdom of Hawaii. If I had, or if Kaupo Ranch had asserted that we were adversely possessing an easement that under operation of law could not exist, that would be violative of Rule 11, and probably the rules of professional conduct as well. So we instead just set adverse statute of limitations and laches.
Well, assuming that the statute of limitations is different for prescriptive easement versus an implied easement, and therefore the statute of limitations would not bar the claim in this case, Mr. Jenkins, how do you address the ICA's determination that the Kellogg analysis, you know, from the California court ought to apply to the unity of interest element at this point?
Well, I think that addresses two different issues here. If you're talking about the statute of limitations, then we're talking about the adoption of the Castle Associates case as far as being an accrual case and having the prescriptive period set by 657.31.
Okay, well, let's move beyond let's assume that the statute of limitations in this case doesn't bar the implied easement. And then we move to this unity of interest, or the issue of the unity of ownership and whether or not it can be met by the government being the original grantor.
Okay, well, both the Kellogg case and the Murphy case are based on California law, which in turn is based on Spanish law. When the United States has acquired California, it also acquired the law based on Spanish precedent. I think it's rather be an error, as Hawaii's jurisprudence really comes from the common law of England and not the common law of Spain, for this court to put much credence in what the California courts ruled in either Kellogg or Birch.
But wasn't the analysis not so much based on a connection to Spanish law as it was with the proposition that is a proposition that I think has been accepted in other jurisdictions, that where the government is the original owner and they do transfer title to a parcel that is landlocked, that there is an implied easement from the point of view that the government is deemed to have not entered into a conveyance that would be worthless?
I think that is also kind of a red herring in this particular case. If you look at the maps of this particular parcel, you'll see that the question of whether the Maulani Group property is landlocked is one of the questions in this case to begin with.
I don't mean to suggest otherwise. I mean, it may be that the factual determination, if this case was sent back, since this was a granting of a motion for summary judgment, would be along the lines that you're suggesting. But, you know, this is a motion for summary judgment.
Okay, but if you're referring to the public policy that the government will only grant a parcel of land with all of its attributes, we maintain that in this particular case, the Mahulani Group land was conveyed with those attributes, but along the coastal route and not through the Kaupo Ranch parcel. We believe that the O'Okala sugar plantation case is appropriate here, and when the Kingdom of Hawaii granted the Kaupo Ranch parcel, it became inviolate. There were no hidden rights, no hidden encumbrances that did not appear on the royal patent grant phase. And that's a case that has been solid Hawaii precedent since 1900. And I hope that this court would be very cautious before modifying that particular rule.
Does that rule apply to latent sort of ambiguity?
If it's an ambiguity as far as the location of the property, then parallel evidence can be admitted to basically adjust the location of the property. But as far as the actual property itself and any encumbrances, the O'Okala sugar plantation case said if it's not in the four corners of the grant, it does not exist.
Doesn't it also talk about circumstances as well? Isn't there? I don't recall that case being absolute in the way it approached it.
Okay, well, the language that I'm referring to is, and I'm quoting, this is Supreme Court language from 1900. It is settled that if there's a patent ambiguity or one apparent in the face of the grant, parallel evidence is inadmissible, and in such case, the grant is void.
But
it's also settled that if there is no ambiguity, patent or latent, parallel evidence is inadmissible to vary or contradict the terms of the grant. In such case, the question is one of construction to be determined by the court upon a consideration of the grant itself and not go outside of the grant and say, well, gee, was there a quasi-easement someplace? Well,
but the next sentence of that quote is, but it is equally well settled that if there is a latent ambiguity, that is, one arising from matters outside the grant, parole, or extraneous evidence, is admissible to explain it, for if it arises aliunde, it may also be explained aliunde. And my question to you is, if you convey a piece of property with no access to it, that seems like you're conveying something of no value. I mean, if you can't even access your property, doesn't that raise a question as to what the intent was of the grantor?
I don't think the court needs to go there in this particular case because I don't believe this property was landlocked when it was conveyed.
And why is that?
If you look at the survey maps for the property, you'll see there's a number of properties along the coast in this area. And none of them actually touch or adjoin the Pi'ilani Highway. My guess is that there is an old coastal road. That was never alleged in this case. This case really doesn't seem to be so much about being a landlocked parcel as much as wanting the shortest pathway between
When you say it's not part of the record, I mean, is this something new that we're supposed to be looking? Is this part of the record that there's all kinds of other access to this property?
No.
No?
No.
It's not part of the record.
It's not. The maps are part of the record. And the maps have been referred to in both the Mahulani brief and in the Kaupo Ranch brief.
Correct. And so you're saying that the maps indicate there's other access, or?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure which map you're referring to, but the map that seems to have been included in the record below shows grant 2340 that is surrounded by parcel, except you might argue for one spot where there could be some connection to a road potentially, but it seems that that's a matter, isn't that a matter to be decided factually in the court,
yes,
by the court below?
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
But
so,
as far as...
Yes. But to complete the thought, if I'm following Justice Pollack, which I think is a good point, if it is true that there is an argument that actually this is an implied easement, why wouldn't that be kind of a classic area of ambiguity and therefore the parole evidence wouldn't apply, parole evidence rule?
I believe under the old college sugar plantation case, that parole evidence would not be admissible to show that the Kaupo Ranch property was encumbered by a quasi-easement prior to its conveyance from the Kingdom of Hawaii to Kaupo Ranch.
But that assumes there's no ambiguity, right? I mean, O'Kala recognizes if there's an ambiguity, then evidence, parole evidence would be admissible. So I understand your argument, I guess, is that there's just no ambiguity. You've got a patent that doesn't say anything about an easement, and therefore you can't pursue an implied easement. But wouldn't that mean you could never have an implied easement if you've got two patents? In other words, unless it's an express easement that's included in the conveyance, under your analysis, you could never bring up parole evidence to establish an implied easement.
Oh, okay. Let me clarify that. The Mauleani group quoted the case of Kalakoa versus Keawe, a 9 Hawaii 1893. And in that case, there were two adjacent royal patent grants. In that particular case, both of those royal patent grants were conveyed to a fellow named Waiaha. Waiaha then sold them. In that case, there was the possibility of an implied easement, but the government was not the common grantor, the required common grantor. What I'm talking about, and what I believe the O'Kala Sugar Plantation case concerns itself with, is a direct royal patent grant, which is a legislative act. It's not just a conveyance from the Kingdom of Hawaii or from the territory or the state to an individual. That legislative act, that royal patent grant, is a different sort of conveyance and has different rules for construction. In the case I just mentioned, however, where you have the common grantor and he conveys one of his royal patent grants without an easement, yeah, then the doctrine of easement by implication certainly can arise.
And then you would admit parole evidence?
Not to challenge the original grant language, but the terms of the conveyance by Waiaka to the subsequent grantees.
Sure, to define the implied easement?
Yes.
Right. Well, I understand your, okay. The statutory analysis that you're suggesting means that this is a different case because of the nature of the government being the common grantor.
Yes, I think in this case, you know, many states have wrestled with this particular problem, and in other states, there has been a legislative solution where the state has said it will exercise its powers of eminent domain to grant an easement in cases like this, as opposed to undermine the, if you want to use the word sanctity, of a patent grant from the government. And that's probably the proper solution in this case.
Mr. Jenks, I want to bring you back to the statute of limitations argument. So, in effect, your argument is that the easement may have been terminated by prescription in this case, in other words, by the lack of response or the negative response by Kaupo Ranch to the request for the easement?
Yes, after the Magoon brothers, now the Mauleani group, said we're going to considering filing a quiet title action unless you give us an easement. That's the gist of that original correspondence. So, and then Kaupo Ranch says, no, we're not going to let you on that. We will not grant you an easement.
So what exactly was the trial court or the circuit court's ruling? It's that 657.31 dealing with possessory interest in land shall be used as a prescriptive period. So what I understand, the circuit court ruled that that particular statute might not be applicable in these circumstances. And I looked at your brief, and you argue there's sort of a common law prescriptive period. So can you walk us through what your argument is in terms of what the circuit court has ruled and what you believe the appropriate period of time? Because your theory is that beginning in 1984, some clock began to run. Which clock is that, and explain how that, where we find that in the HRS?
Yeah. The case law, and especially the case law adopted by the ICA in the Childs versus Harada cases, Matouche versus Loving, and that particular case is representative of a number of cases throughout the nation. And under that case, it says that the period of time in which you have to do something, run to court, if the serving estate will not let you use your easement, is the prescriptive period of the state in question. In this particular state, Hawaii, Chapter 669, the Quiet Title Action statute, and 657-31, both are 20 years. That is the prescriptive period in this particular state. That is the period of time that somebody has to run to court in the event that you have the dominant estate and you try to exercise your easement and the surviving estate says no.
So what difference does the letter make? I mean, if you have 20 years, why didn't it start running from the date of the conveyance?
The prescriptive period under the Castle Associates case ran from when Warren Gunderson, the senior vice president of Kalpo Ranch, wrote to Mr. Phillips of the Carl Smith firm and said, we will not grant you an easement. That is a denial of the request to enter the land. The 20-year period started at that time.
So that you think that circuit court ruled there was no statute of limitations, or what exactly did the circuit court rule that we're being asked to review today? There is no applicable statute. You weren't citing the correct statute, or what?
Okay. Of course, there were two summary judgment hearings in this matter. The initial one, the circuit court, the trial court, ruled in favor of Kalpo Ranch. It then went upstairs to the Intermediate Court of Appeals for a number of years. When the Malulani case was decided in 2013, the ICA said, hey, 657-31 does not apply to easements. It only applies to possessory interests in land. Now, you're wrong. There is no statute of limitations in Hawaii jurisprudence that applies to easements, to non-possessory interests.
So that's what the trial court relied on then?
Yes. But then that same year, the ICA passed Childs versus Harada and the Lovingood case, where they're saying, okay, the period of time is the prescriptive period. And so there's a conflict between the two ICA opinions.
Very well. Anything further at this time, or you want to reserve your time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor, I'm done.
Okay. Mr. Cox.
May it please the court. Your Honor, the Malulani Group is asking for a resolution of two issues of law at this point in the stage of this litigation. The first issue is whether or not the government, and in this circumstance, the Kingdom of Hawaii, would qualify as a common grantor under the unity of ownership, such that then the Malulani Group can move on to the second step in obtaining an implied easement by necessity, which would be showing that it was actually necessary, which is not before the court right now and would be something that would be back at the circuit court to make those factual determinations in regards to what was discussed earlier with Kalpo Ranch in regards to whether there had been prior ocean roads or the maps themselves indicated that it was not necessary. But that's not before the court right now. The second issue before the court is in regards to the application of 657-31, and as ruled by the circuit court in accord with where the ICA ruled, that 657-31 simply does not apply to implied easements of necessity. And in regards to the argument that there's a conflict between the earlier ICA decision on behalf of Kapo Ranch and the Malulani Group versus the Childs v. Harada matter, there is no conflict, Your Honor. In particular, well, I guess the reality is that by timing, Kapo Ranch was actually decided afterwards. Judge Fujisi was on both panels. They were certainly aware of the Childs v. Harada matter. Childs v. Harada talks specifically, though, about whether or not there can be a triggering event. They don't talk about 657-31. What they talk about is whether or not there could be a triggering event, and in that circumstance, they did identify that a demand letter pursuant to the Castle case that is cited in there, that a demand letter could be a triggering event. Then, subsequently, in order to have the prescriptive or the adverse possession of a prescriptive easement, they would have to show all of the other exclusionary activities that occurred during that time period. None of those circumstances are what occurred in regards to the Kalpo Ranch circumstance, but in particular, With Calpo Ranch, we're talking again about an implied easement by necessity, and in that circumstance, as has been recognized by the Hawaii courts, well before we were a territory, or well before we were a state, but the Kingdom of Hawaii, with Pono v. Achi, which is 5 Hawaii 176, an 1884 case, which is cited within the Childs matter, they identify that implied easements by necessity are, they have been recognized, and that it's well-established law. And so in application to the Childs v. Harada matter as to whether or not it would actually apply to the Maolani versus Kapo Ranch matter, it simply does not. And the reason for that, so that 65731 would not apply, makes sense. Outside of it being that they're not seeking to have a possessory right, the implied easement by necessity is not a possessory right. More than that, when you have an implied easement, the implied easement by necessity doesn't terminate until the need terminates. And so the running of whether or not it would actually be in place can only occur when the need actually terminates, which again would be a factual determination that would need to be brought at the time. And in this circumstance here, with 65731, it specifically identifies the possessory interest, as well as then it does identify, as the ICA has outlined, the right of entry. But in both of those circumstances, what they're talking about is whether or not they actually would have possession of the land. And the right of entry portion is specific to an ejectment action, where someone else is on your land and you're actually trying to get them and obtain or reobtain possession of your own land. So 65731 does not have any application. But the reason that in this unique circumstance that it's important is the public policy behind ensuring that in this very narrow circumstance, the policy is that you don't want to have landlocked properties incapable of being used for the stewardship of the landowner. And so as opposite to necessarily finding a circumstance where there would be somehow uncertainty in regards to the titles, this provides a level of certainty for those who are in a landlocked circumstance that, based upon the common law that goes back to the 13th century, that you always do have that implied easement by necessity when you're in a landlocked situation. And, Your Honors, what then really comes before this court is the more issue of first impression for the state of Hawaii, which is whether or not the common grantor can be a government entity. And again, here, as opposed to the suggestion provided by Kapo Ranch that there would not be clarity of title in that circumstance where you have the common grantor could have been a government entity, it's in fact the opposite to that. What you want to be able to have is for all of those properties that are actually landlocked parcels, that they too would have that opportunity, regardless of whether or not the common grantor was a public entity or a private entity, they too would have the opportunity to proceed forward, as outlined in the Kellogg matter, that so long as the dominant parcel was conveyed over first, as did occur in this situation here, but so long as that occurred first, then you would have the implied easement by necessity in place. And so...
So your client received...
That's correct, Your Honor. By royal patent in 1857, there was the conveyance of the the Maolani parcel to T.C. Willington. And then subsequently in 1859, there was the conveyance by royal patent to the Kaupo parcel. Now, again, Your Honor, the issue as to whether or not the second element is satisfied is not before the court now. There certainly is within the record that that the maps delineating the parcels there, and there is a dispute that will be before the circuit court in regards to whether or not The necessity portion actually occurred at the time so that it could otherwise be satisfied. But again, that's not what the Malalani group is asking to have affirmed from the circuit court. We're asking for the very narrow circumstance of when you have a landlocked parcel that you, the landlocked parcel, can show that you were the dominant parcel, having been conveyed over first, subsequent to the surrounding parcel, the servient parcel, prior to the servient parcel, such that then you would be able to identify and move on to the next issue in regards to the implied easement.
Which is what the ICA decided.
That's exactly what the ICA decided.
So in a sense, when you say it's an issue of first impression, I mean, really all that needs to be decided in one sense is whether summary judgment was properly granted.
Yes, Your Honor. And in regards to then the next question as to the issue of whether or not there would be a adverse possession over this implied easement, then as the ICA has already decided in regards to the inapplicability of 657.31, what we're looking for now is just an affirmation of then what Judge Cardoza did down at the circuit court was to say that simply doesn't apply. Now,
you're basically conceding that you would not get a there is no prescriptive issues here. You're only arguing an easement by necessity.
We are only arguing an easement by necessity. Yes,
and
Your Honor.
You're conceding
as before this.
That if the necessity disappears, then it's possible that there would no longer be an easement.
That's correct,
like
Your Honor.
If they built a highway on the lower portion.
And that's exactly in line with what the case law is and the common law is in regards to an implied easement by necessity. If it is that there is another road that would provide the access that came right up against the Malalani parcel, then there is no longer the necessity in place. Similarly, then, if it is that there was a utility access or a water access, and it needs to be proportional to the area there, but those are all issues that will then go subsequently back to the Second Circuit Court for further hearing in regards to whether or not the necessity, you know, was in place, is in place, and whether or not they are able to proceed forward with it. So
are you aware of any authority for the proposition that a statute of limitations applies to the assertion of an implied easement?
Your Honor, actually, there is authority. It's the Litchie case, and I believe it is out of, well, it's not this jurisdiction, Illinois. It's out of Illinois, Your Honor. We do have it cited in our brief. Actually, we have it cited in our brief for the proposition that, in fact, the triggering event, that they need to actually plead that the statute of limitations would be an issue on this. But there is case law that is in place that says that.
Thank you.
If nothing further.
Anything further from the court? Very well, Mr. Jenkins, your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Just one point for clarification. From what I understand, Malalani Group is taking the position that as long as there is a need, there will be a easement by implication available. And that leads to an almost absurd result. For example, if there was a parcel of land that was only accessed by an express grant of easement, and that express grant of easement was adversely possessed and canceled, then under the Malalani theory, it wouldn't make any difference because then that landlocked parcel, even though it had lost its express grant of easement, would still be able to assert an easement by necessity. I don't think that's how it works. I think that the reason why people have up to 20 years to get judicial relief is because it is such an important right. And so if the cause of action has accrued, they need to assert their right. They can't just say, well, we still have a need, and therefore the statute of limitations doesn't apply. I have nothing further unless you have questions.
Any questions from the court? Very well. Thank you to both our attorneys. The court will take this matter under advisement.